Welcome to Generation Now. I'm Troy McDonald. Thank you for spending a part of your Saturday morning here with us. Today, a subject that is personal, that is close to home. Today, we welcome from Gateway Technical College, Dr. Emma Hendrith, who is the Director of Student Support and Tutoring Services here, and Shayla Thompson, who is a Student Support Specialist. Last week, or a couple weeks ago, we had something here on the Gateway campus called Employee Learning Day, which I thought was going to be an excuse to pop in my AirPods and kind of fade away into my music. But it actually ended up being a pretty awesome, fantastic learning experience, and I'm grateful for it. But the best session, was held by Dr. Emma Hendrith and Shayla Thompson on the subject of generational poverty, which is, like I said, close to home and very personal for me. And so I wanted the both of them to come in and go over what generational poverty is and how it affects really everyone in our community and, of course, students here at Gateway. So please help me welcome Dr. Emma Hendrith and Shayla Thompson.
Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you. The pleasure is ours.
Absolutely.
So, first of all, I want to kind of talk about the workshop. How did you guys come together to really start this workshop?
It's so funny. I've only been here a year. This is Emma talking. And Shayla has done extensive research in this area, and I've done some in my undergrad. So it was always an interesting subject for me. However, we did another presentation, and I don't know, what was that presentation for?
It was for faculty in service week that
yes.
they had.
And so I guess it was very well received and there was a lot of interest. So we were asked to do the Employee Learning Day version. And I was just excited to be able to talk about things that are pertinent to what we really have to deal with in our community.
Mm-hmm. And then also going along with that, for me, I got into this work with doing the research into generational poverty and just poverty in general, and also with understanding and engaging under college resource students. I got into the work because I went to an actual training. And then when I went to the training, they actually had a segment that you can sign up to do a train-to-trainer session. And so I took advantage of that opportunity. It was a free training to get trained by Dr. Bethany Tucker, who wrote the book Understanding Engagement Under College, Under-Resourced College Students. And so she trained us, and it was just an amazing experience. After that, I went to another one called Bridges Out of Poverty, which is also through the same company, which is AHA Process, and under the works of Dr. Ruby Payne. And so that's the reason why I kind of got into this work to do something, to do a presentation on this to our faculty and staff, because we serve so many students here that we know are impoverished. And also, kind of like you, Troy, it hit home for me with when you're talking about generational poverty.
I mean, Maya Angelou has this quote that says, it's something, and I'm going to paraphrase this, that there's no greater agony than to have a story that's untold.
Absolutely.
That's within you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it felt like in this workshop. People mm-hmm. were just sharing their stories.
Mm-hmm.
White people, black people,
mm-hmm.
people from
mm-hmm.
different socioeconomic backgrounds,
mm-hmm.
sharing that they had at one point been through this.
Mm-hmm.
And hearing those
yes.
stories was empowering, because I was not alone. I was not alone. So
yes.
did you guys intend for the workshop to kind of end up to kind of go that way?
Well, we work really well together, and we saw that kind of energy and synergy in the previous presentation, so I was not surprised at how it went, because I think it is very powerful, and I knew it would probably hit home to some people, so I did expect it to be very engaging and interactive, and, you know, you just never know, but I kind of figured that would happen.
Yeah, and also those are the kind of presenters that Emma and I are. We love to talk. Don't get us wrong. However,
yes.
we don't like to just talk at individuals. We want everyone to be engaged, and we wanted to create that atmosphere where it was a safe place where individuals felt safe. They felt comfortable enough to share their stories. So I really wasn't surprised that so many people shared their stories, because I think what happens is they kind of came off of our energy and
Absolutely.
Seeing that we were open to sharing our story,
Absolutely.
Even though we're providing facts, but we also, you know, we're tying it into our lives as well. And so I think with us doing that and being transparent enough, that was open invitations for everyone else to be like, hey, I went through something similar to that. Let me share my story as well.
Hmm. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. I concur.
Mm-hmm. So let's kind of take a back step here a little bit and explain for those who don't know what generational poverty is.
So the actual definition of generational poverty is the type of poverty involves the birth of two generations into poverty. And so basically, it also depends on how you define poverty as well, because one of the things that we go over in a workshop is we go over several definitions of what poverty is.
Absolutely.
And it all just depends on your take of poverty. But we try to look at, like, the resources. So it's not even just about the monetary value, not having that. It's more so about those lacking those resources as well. Mm-hmm. So that's when we look at generational poverty. It's just like lacking of resources from one generation to the next generation. To the next generation.
And the cycle just continues on and on. And so when we see that in our communities, there's always, to me, there's a judgment of, you know, oh, why can't they get out of that, you know, situation? Mm-hmm. And to me, it's much more complicated than that. And that's what the research says as well.
Right. One of the facts that you presented and just struck me is that it takes 3 to 5 generations to break the cycle.
Absolutely.
Yes,
that's
absolutely.
Insane.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's really crazy, because when you sit back and you think about it, it really is a reality for those of us mm-hmm. who are part of generational poverty. If we're trying that, we are striving to get out, it's certain habits that we picked up from our parents.
From survival.
Up, yes, mm-hmm. exactly. It's all about means of survival. Mm-hmm. So it's just that it is real that it takes that long to get out of that mindset to break anything that's a habit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to learn what to do and what not to do. I think that was the biggest challenge for me. You know, just coming from a place of, okay, my family was poor, first generation going to college, what does that look like? Okay, I go to college, but I don't know how to go about filling out the forms. I don't know how to mm-hmm. go about, you know, setting up, getting tutoring or figuring out what resources mm-hmm. to have and when to study, when not, you know, those kind of things. And I see that other people knew those things already. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, oh my goodness, I'm looking around, and I'm like, okay. And I had to learn that way. And I think a lot of people that experience impoverishment of any kind experience those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I think when I was in the workshop, that was one of the examples that I brought to the group was I didn't know how to fill out the FAFSA mm-hmm, form mm-hmm. and what was needed. Mm-hmm. And so when they said words like EFC, which is expected family contribution, mm-hmm. I didn't know what that meant. I had to kind of figure that out as I went along.
Yes, absolutely.
What are we touched on some of them, but, you know, the misconceptions that if people just only pull themselves up by the bootstraps, they can get out. I think Sunny Hostin, who's a co-host on The View, said some people don't have boots mm-hmm. to be able to pull themselves up. So what are some other misconceptions about people that are in generational poverty?
I think one of the biggest ones is that they don't want to get out. Mm-hmm. And they're not trying to get out. And I think that people don't understand that it's not as easy as you already stated, Troy, that it takes 3 to 5 generations to get out of generational poverty. And some folks, they don't know what resources are available to them. They don't have anyone that's providing them with that knowledge, mm-hmm. what they call it, intergenerational transfer of knowledge. And mm-hmm. what that is, saying that it's coming from someone else telling you from generational, telling you, okay, this is what to expect, either, you know, in college, out in the world in general. Mm-hmm. But if people do not have that knowledge, they lack it, and they don't know the first place to go to receive that knowledge, then already they're kind of already by the wayside a little bit. Mm-hmm. So it's not as easy as people think that it is to get out of generational poverty.
Right. I completely agree. It's a difficult thing to, I mean, I consider myself somewhat successful in my job, but I swear every year I learn something new about something that I feel like I should have known. And that doesn't even have to do with necessarily education, but it's like just life. I'm like, oh, man, I should have had this with my finances. I should have done this with it. And I think that impoverishment is what where you get stuck, and that cycle continues because when you don't know, you're embarrassed. Mm-hmm. You're trying to figure out what to do. You don't know who's going to be in your corner. Mm-hmm. And so you continue to do the things that you've done. And the misconception, I think, is that people assume that they're unintelligent, that they don't have any goals or want anything more in life, and that's definitely not the case. Sometimes there's some tremendous obstacles and challenges that are in the way, and I think it's pertinent for us to remember that those challenges are big. Mm-hmm. They're big.
And I think so, going along with that too, Miss Emma, I think, like, even kind of going back to some of the things that we did in the workshop with looking at the mental model of poverty, that whole thing with relationships, and I think a huge misconception of individuals who are in generational poverty is they automatically feel like no one cares. And that's a huge misconception because there are people out there that really do care and do want to help. Sometimes, you know, it kind of gets fainted because of, tainted because of other individuals who may have looked at you in a different kind of manner, prejudged you already, provided you with some information and delivered it in a way that you couldn't understand or that you just didn't like with certain types of tone. But there are people out there that are willing to help you move forward and try to get out of the generational poverty.
And I can hear some people, hopefully it's not you listening, but there's some people who are listening who are probably thinking, why are you dumbing this down? Why are you dumbing this information down? And you made that point in the presentation that you're not trying to dumb this information down. You're just trying to meet people where they are and bring them along.
Yes, bridge the gap, you know, level the playing field to some extent. I think with anything, you know, you have a group of people and you see them not achieving what you think they should be achieving, you're like, oh, they can follow this route. But if they don't know the route, or they fear the route because of the unknown, because, you know, maybe they've only seen negative reactions with, you know, other people who've tried that route. So there's a lot of dynamics that need to be addressed with that, and that's why this work is so important.
Absolutely.
Obviously, the show Generation Now is a show hosted by Millennial Me, but we try to target, you know, and talk to about the issues we face. How does this issue affect millennials and Gen Z?
Well, you're a millennial, Shayla.
For me, because I am a millennial like you, Troy, I really think that, like, especially with now with technology into play, social media into play, already, like, individuals who come from generational poverty, some of us, we do not speak in a manner that some of our other counterparts may speak in that did not come from generational poverty. They know more words. They have a bigger vocabulary.
Extensive vocabulary, absolutely.
And so the thing about it is that sometimes, and especially now in the day of texting, the day of social media, that already is just playing into the already misconception that, you know, people from generational poverty don't know anything or they're not trying to learn anything.
Unintelligent.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like with the millennials, I think now with the individuals who are in generational poverty, sometimes you can fall a little bit further down into that hole because now we may not speak the same way that some of our other counterparts are speaking because now we're speaking in text lingo. Just going into social media and looking at that as being our outlet versus of maybe picking up a book or something like that and going somewhere else to try to channel that energy. So I think that is one of things that may affect the millennials a little bit more than, you know, some other generations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a great point, and I'll piggyback on that a little bit, just thinking about some of the people that I've come across who are millennials, and they struggle with just a more face-to-face. You know, you've got to interview. You've got to be able to interact and communicate effectively. And I'd look at these, you know, people that will come in for interviews, because I interview quite a bit, and I said, well, I wonder what they're thinking or what, you know. And then I'm like, okay, they have had no experience doing this, you know, in terms of
Absolutely.
Being face-to-face. And that's part of that challenge with it being, you know, technology. They're only focused on technology. And then the same applies to the whole writing bit. You see them writing papers mm-hmm. if they do get to this point, and they're actually texting and they're writing. Mm-hmm. And I've also witnessed it with I remember somebody asking me, who was part of the generational poverty, I was trying to help them out, and they were like, well, could you help me, you know, fill out this application at Sam's Club? It's online, you know, mm-hmm. and they didn't know the questions that they were being asked, you mm-hmm. know, and so I stood there and kind of helped and, you know, interpret, but all of those things mm-hmm. are part of that.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to a fascinating conversation. This is Generation Now. I'm Troy McDonald. This is WGTD 91.1 FM. I'm here with Emma Hendrith, the Director of Student Support and Tutoring, and Shayla Thompson, Student Support Specialist, both at Gateway Technical College. We'll continue our discussion talking about what makes you proud about the research that you've done. Obviously, you've done, as you noted earlier, several workshops, so you're entrenched in this. What makes you most proud when you have those workshops?
For me, like I said, it has generational poverty hits home for me. A first generation college student hits home for me. Single parent, teen mom, that hits home for me. What really makes me proud is that someone took the initiative to start doing this research, to know that it is the issue, know that there is something that can be done about it, that know that there are individuals out there that needs to be educated on how to effectively teach students who are in generational poverty, effectively how to talk to students who are in generational poverty. And so to me, that just brightened up my day when I realized that this research was out there, that this training was out there. I had went to even to our college president, because they were saying that if we had so many people applying to do the trainer session on understanding and engaging under resource college students, that they would go to the college presidents to get their recommendation. I scheduled a meeting with Brian Albrecht, our president at Gateway, and shared with him my passion behind this. And please, if they come to you, can you please recommend me to go to this training session? Because, like I said, I just thought it was huge, and I think that it's one of those conversations like the elephant in the room. We know that there is an issue, but no one wants to do anything about the issue. No one wants to help out with this issue. No one's trying to understand the students that walk into Gateway Technical College every day into these classrooms. And so when it was presented to us to do this workshop, I was just overjoyed, like, yes, this is needed. We need to get mm-hmm. this word out. Mm-hmm. However, I think we kind of realized, though, too, that sometimes the people that need to hear this workshop
yes.
are not always present, though.
Yes.
So that's the other piece of it. Mm-hmm. That the ones that came to this workshop, they were open about their stories, but these are the ones that we lived this, right? We lived these mm-hmm. experiences that we came across in our research, but mm-hmm. we need to make sure that those other individuals who may not have lived this,
exposed to
yes,
that.
Mm-hmm. but they have the students coming into their classrooms, they need to hear this, they need to hear the
important
information.
Work. Yeah, absolutely.
I think, Emma, one of the examples you brought up was, I believe it was in the workshop, it was you, that said that some students don't know how to do certain things in the classroom.
Absolutely.
And that these teachers expect them to know this kind of information.
Absolutely.
And they don't.
And so it helps for us to kind of share this work, because we're hoping that, especially after that, the workshop, we're thinking, okay, how do we get this to faculty? How do we get this to people that may be able to impact a group of people? Because really that's what we're talking about, influencing others to understand that it's more than what you see, mm-hmm. you know, and that there's a different way of addressing some of these students mm-hmm. because they come from different challenges that you may not have any idea about, mm-hmm. you know. And I think that's huge in just thinking about faculty, but also to think about administration and mm-hmm. other ways. So I think the training part is essential. It's just how do we, you know, get the buy-in.
Right, absolutely.
So we're talking about getting the staff buy-in on the training aspect part. What are some things that obviously people who are listening might be listening at home, they might be faculty, they might mm-hmm. be just regular people. What are some things that people can do when they come across this issue, or people who are in this issue, or if they're dealing with it themselves? What are some action steps that we can take to fix this issue?
Oh, that's huge. Mm-hmm. I believe that it's several things, mm-hmm. And it comes from, because everybody, I think a lot of people feel like I'm just one person and mm-hmm. I can't do anything. And I think if more of us took the time to say, okay, I am one person that can help this person, we'd have a better outcome, just like this person asked me if I could help him with his application. And as a person who works in higher ed, I ask probing questions to try to figure out if there's some way I can help a person that I might suspect that they don't have an answer or are afraid to, you know, ask the question, because I want them to understand that they don't always know the question to ask. Mm-hmm. So I'm here to try to help that, because I remember not knowing the question to ask. So for me, it's just that one step at a time. Like, just remember, every one of us isn't the same. We have to look at people differently and where we all come from differently. So if you see an opportunity, take it mm-hmm. To educate someone or educate yourself.
Absolutely.
Because I think that's another piece of it. It has to be that understanding of, okay, what does this mean, and how does this affect me or my classroom or whatever, and how can I help in that way? What does it mean to help? You know, nothing degrading, nothing humiliating, mm-hmm. but definitely something that's empowering and informing is a way to help.
Mm-hmm. And then also for individuals who are in generational poverty. I push this not only because I work in higher ed, because that's what my master's degree is in, but it really is the truth. Studies show, and it's been proven, that education is one of the surest ways out of generational mm-hmm. poverty. And so I encourage, if you are out there listening and you are part of generational poverty, if you do not have education is one of the surest ways you can get out. And it's not saying you have to go and get a PhD, a bachelor's degree, a associate's degree. Even if you just had some type of credential behind your name, if it's a certificate. Here at Gateway, we have so many embedded certificates into our programming
goodness, yes.
that you can get out and get a job with the certificates that you receive here from Gateway and go out and make an honest living and
Absolutely.
Make a living enough where you can support yourself, and if you have children, support your children. So for me, I just want to speak to individuals who are in generational poverty to say that, hey, you can do it. And the reason why I know you can do it is because I did it. And I know that everyone's story is so different. We all are
Absolutely.
Different. However, I'm not ashamed to share that I was a teen mom. I had my son when I was a senior in high school. But what did I do? I went straight to Parkside after I graduated from high school. And I completed my degree in 4 years. Took a little break and went and got my master's degree. And so the thing about it is that I knew that was the only way that I can be my son's superhero is to prove to him that regardless of what situation you have in front of you, it's all about what you do with the cards that you are dealt with.
Absolutely.
And that's why I encourage individuals that you have to go out and get some type of education. I'm not saying you have to come up and get a master's degree, or in Miss Emma case, working on a PhD. However,
reach on, Shayla.
You have to have some type of credential in order to get yourself out of the situation that you're in. So,
and see, that's one of the things. I first of all, that is just absolutely amazing. Kudos to you.
Thank you. You're just
an inspiration.
Absolutely.
I know that touched so many people who are listening, and me, of course, my goodness. I know that for me, one of the things I mentioned was modeling my future, mm-hmm. because my family, my mom is a single mom, my father left, he had PTSD and wasn't mm-hmm. really around, and so she never had the opportunity to finish college, so it was a mm-hmm. struggle. Mm-hmm. I would get off the bus sometimes and see We Energies, mm-hmm. orange stickers, and I'll never forget seeing that mm-hmm. orange neon sticker going, oh, And we have no rights.
Absolutely.
You know, and knowing this is not going to define me. This experience is temporary, and I'm going to get out of it. And so I became the first person in my family to graduate from college like you. And
Awesome.
Yeah. And you're so right. I looked at it that way, too, was education is the only way I'm going to be able to take care of myself.
Absolutely.
You know, Emma, for you, you mentioned in the, and Shayla did too, that you're getting your PhD.
My EDD, so okay. it's my doctorate.
Yeah, doctorate in education. So talk about that process and why that's personal for you, I guess. Why that level of education for you?
It's interesting because I had no idea. I was relatively good student in high school, and I enjoyed school for the most part. But going to college was kind of like, okay, well, I guess I got to go because what else am I going to do? And so I went away to college and found out that it wasn't as easy as I thought, but I was in survival mode. So I did what anybody who's surviving does. They turn around, they ask people, they figure it out, they whatever. And so then I went on and I said, okay, well, I don't really like what this bachelor's, once I completed the bachelor's, I don't really like what it's limiting me to do, because I didn't understand also about master's and doctorates.
Absolutely.
So I had no idea that you go for this and, you know, get this kind of job or go, you know. So I was still kind of feeling my way. And with my master's, I looked at teaching as an option. So I was like, okay, well, I think I would like to teach. Oh, you find out you got to get a master's in education then. So then I went and got my master's in education and found out I didn't want to teach the K through 12 kids after my student teaching. thank God I was already in higher ed. And so ended up with a master's in education. And then I had, I have always worked throughout all my degrees. I've always been a working and single mom for the most part. And so with my son, who was disabled at the time, you know, it was compounded because I was always trying to, that was during my master's and then starting my doctorate. And so I had to kind of figure out how to navigate that as well as other, you know, situations. But overall, it's just whatever challenges come up, you have to believe that you can do it. You have to believe in yourself. And if you don't believe in yourself, surround yourself with people that believe in you.
Yes.
And try not keep, this sounds so simplistic, but keep the negativity away from you. Because everything you do is, it's unknown for people like us who hadn't had those experiences, had someone paved the way. So you have to be careful that all those negative thoughts will come in your head on your own. So you don't want anyone around you that's going to reinforce that. So for me, getting to the doctorate level, it was like, okay, my son was disabled. I ended up, it's actually, it's in education, but it's in disability and education, because that was where all my focus was, all my energy was, and still is to that, because I'm most probably passionate about that as well as the whole impoverishment and all of that. So that's where a lot of the work came in for me. So once I found out I could do another level of that, and it's interesting, the master's was most, it was easier to me, and then the doctorate was easiest to me. And the master's because, yes. Well, think about it. In undergrad, you're taking all these different courses that you may or may not like, especially for the first 2 years.
Right.
Master's is focused on something you're interested in.
Yes.
So all the readings I was doing, I was fascinated by, and I love that. The doctorate is even more curtailed to the, ooh, I really enjoy this. So even while you're working, you're discussing, you're doing, because you're not there yet, Shayla, and you will be. I already know this. You're looking at me like, right. But absolutely. So that's how I ended up with a doctorate, long story. I'm doing my, I finished all my courses, and I'm at the dissertation stage. So.
Wow. Congratulations. I mean, you are, and you mentioned you have children. What do your children think about, or I don't know their ages, but if they're old enough, what do they think about, like you said, being their superhero?
Yeah, so.
I don't know, because mine still hasn't figured out that I'm her superhero, but she's 9 and a little entitled, so we're working on that.
For me, I actually have three children. I have a 16-year-old, a soon-to-be 10-year-old this Saturday, and I have a 4-year-old. And for me, it's probably more so of my oldest because he was there from the time I started my undergrad, completed my master's, and they see that, they know that higher education is the surest way out. In my household, it's actually a rule that college is not an option. Like, there's no other way but going to college. And so even my soon-to-be 10-year-old, it's so funny even talking to her. She's in the fifth grade, and the first day of school, before the first day of school, she was stressed out because she said, oh, my gosh, Mom, starting fifth grade, this is my last year of elementary. Then I go on to middle school. Then it's high school. Then I'm going to college, and I'm going to be a doctor, and I have all these years that I have to go to school. So... But it's the thing about it is that she already had that future story that she's thinking about. And a lot of times that individuals who are in generational poverty, they don't have that future story. Mm-hmm. It's hard for them to set goals because they're thinking about, okay, I just got to get through the first day of school. I can't even think about,
hungry.
Yes, and trying to figure out where they're going to eat and just everything like that. So
not to get shot on the way to school or something.
Just all kind of things that they have to think about. And so, I try to... continue to be their superhero, from everything that I do, from going to work, making sure that they are, going to school, making sure they are setting goals for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Setting goals is really powerful.
Yes, because sometimes, I just remember being a child. I set goals within myself and, in different programs I was involved in. But like far as like with my parents, us just sitting down and talking about the future and talking about goals, I don't know if that conversation really happened. And if it happened, it probably wasn't in the sense of how I am with my children.
Because you've learned, and I can kind of piggyback on that as well, because I've learned, like, I have to set goals. First of all, I was way too hard on my daughter probably early on. I was like, you're going to be reading right now. Like, let me put this in perspective for you. I am only two. So she brought me down a couple notches. However, she does, they know the language. Mm-hmm. They know the lingo. She knows about higher education. Mm-hmm. She knows, because part of her responsibility in her classroom is to talk about what do your parents do? Mm-hmm. What do you plan to do? They're teaching them early on. And you have to surround yourself, once again, even in your education, of people that are like mine. So I think it's very helpful that she's already getting that, but I don't know if she sees it with me. I think she'll see it later with me.
Right. Mm-hmm.
She'll understand, yeah, Mommy's pretty awesome, but not right now.
I want to touch on this. We're going to be wrapping up here in a few moments, but I wanted to touch on your thoughts on what the community can do, those who are not in higher ed. There was someone who brought up in the workshop that I was at that there are also systemic issues. We all know about the redlining of housing districts, we can go on, from there.
Absolutely.
So obviously higher ed is arguably the biggest component, but what can we do as a community? We have Foxconn and all these big companies coming here, and we love them, but how can we make sure that that new wealth that they say will come is spread evenly?
Absolutely.
And equally.
That's more of it's because technically I'm from Illinois, so I travel over the border. For all you Wisconsin police, just stop giving me tickets. So for me, I see it from a different perspective than people that actually live here. And everybody I talk to here, one of the greatest things that I see in this community is that there is a community, even if there's pockets of communities. So to me, the obvious thing to think about is how to get those communities together and form like coalitions or at least have something that you have a common ground that you're working towards, and then figure out how to, because we know numbers is powerful.
Absolutely.
And then figure out what we want to tackle and what direction we want to go in from there.
Absolutely. Out in the community, I know, like, at our job centers, our workforce development centers, they have the whole career aspect where you can come in, work on your resumes, and get some of those job skills they may be lacking. I think that it's more so of just really trying to come with a different approach, I should say. Because the thing about it is we need to make sure that we treat people as equals, right? Regardless if we know their circumstances, regardless if we can see that, know or don't know the circumstances, if we are prejudging them that they're coming out of, you know, impoverished situations. However, when people are striving to do better with themselves, let's treat them as human beings. Yeah, let's be there to help them. Let's make sure they have these basic job skills that they need to complete a resume, to complete a job application, so they can go and get these jobs from Foxconn and their surrounding partners that will be coming into this area, jobs that are already out there. Because I think what happens is so many times we already shut them out. We count them out.
They're
not good enough. They're not even going to try. You know what?
Absolutely.
They're going to get this job. They're going to go for one day, and they're going to be done. They're going to show up late for work. So it's just those things of trying to meet them where they are at. Bring it down to layman's terms for them so they can have a better understanding what is expected of them once they get out and start working. Let's provide them with those soft skills that we know they are lacking. Let's do some self-reflection of how did we get to where we are at today. Mm-hmm. Had to be someone that was telling us, like we talked about in the workshop about having mentors early in life. I still call him for everything. He's my mentor since I was in college and continuing into adulthood. So it's just like forming those relationships with individuals to make sure you have someone that you can talk to. And so many people in generational poverty, they lack those mentors. So how about you step up and you become someone's mentor, become someone's good day, and help them out with the process along the way.
There's something I want to touch on here, too. Was that in the mental models, we all had in this workshop, everyone had to draw like a mental model of we thought of someone who was in poverty. And I think it was relationships was the number one thing that everything kind of connected to. Mm-hmm. But it was something else for people who are not in poverty. I think it was like connections or...
For wealth.
For wealth.
For wealth,
it's connections.
Yeah.
I wanted to touch on that earlier, and it's interesting you say that because when you were talking about college as a place where... Because I didn't get it. I'll just tell you, when I got my bachelor's, I was like, I paid all this money for what? And I did not get it because it was so competitive coming out of college. I was not prepared for you finally finish and then you the competition to get these jobs. So I was really kind of trying to figure out why I did that and, you know, shouldn't I have just gone to a vocational school or did whatever so I can make money immediately, know that it was guaranteed. But the thing that I take away from college, all of the experiences that I've had, is the connections.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever you go, you're going to need references. Wherever you go, you're going to need people to vouch for you. That's the main thing that people ask, and they want to know that those people are sound, responsible people.
Absolutely.
So you're going to need those connections later in life for something. You're going to need it. So it's really important for me. At this point, I look back and I'm like, holy cow, I learned about all those things from all those different connections and relationships that I made.
Absolutely.
Because those relationships led to other relationships and connections.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, this has just been just fascinating. I cannot thank you both enough for being here today. We'll end on this question. Obviously, you're proud of your work. If you could go back and ask yourself something or tell yourself something before you started this work that you know now, what would you tell your former self, your older, younger self, I guess I would be?
Yes. What would I tell my younger self? To ask more questions earlier on.
Yes. To really... And this goes back to higher ed, to really do research more so on financial aid.
Because loans is not the bomb.
When you are a first generation college student and you have no one telling you to stay away from the loans,
and that there are scholarships available out there.
Yes, yes.
Absolutely.
So that is one thing. And I also... one other thing would be more so when I went to Parkside, I was a commuter student. And like I told you all, I was a single parent, so my focus was to go to school, leave, go to work, and take care of my son. And so I just wish that I had more time to make sure I was more involved on a college campus, because research shows the more likely you are involved on a college campus and involved
more
in college,
the
more connected you are.
Engaged.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so that is one thing that I wish I would have done more of. So now here working in higher ed, I push students to get involved in student clubs and get actively involved in student clubs, get out there and do community services, also doing different activities here on the college campus too. So
and they're resume builders as well.
Absolutely.
So, and that's the other piece that you don't understand until you find out many years later, oh my goodness, that's a resume builder. Like, I worked through college and didn't do internships because I was like, why would I go and do something for free? That mm-hmm. doesn't make any sense to me.
Absolutely.
Like, I had no concept of this experience is valuable for me and it's going to, you know, increase the probability of me getting a job later in life.
Absolutely.
I had no concept. But I do now.
You do now. And you're passing it on to students here. Mm-hmm. And I keep extending this. And what we're going to do here, folks. No, it's not your fault. What we're going to do is we're going to air a 30-minute version on air, and we're going to put this full thing on the website. So if you're listening on the website, this is the full version.
Okay.
But and I don't want to take too much time, but I did want you guys to touch on the stats that were just alarming. And I stopped when, after Employee Learning Day, I saw Shayla in the hallway, and we talked about this. Talk about how many students here at Gateway are facing or are in generational poverty. I mean, this is just...
So, when you look at the students who apply for financial aid and who qualify for financial aid, I looked at the EFC, which is the expected family contribution, of $3,000 or less, which means that you are at low income disadvantage when you meet that EFC. And we are at 71.6% of students who qualify for financial aid are at an EFC of $3,000 or less.
Per year.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
It's $3,000 a year, because I was like, what's $3,000 what? Is it per month?
No, per year.
Per year.
And then also when we look at our first-generation college students, we serve over 5,000 first-generation college students annually. And we know that research tells us that individuals who are first-generation college students, they are part of and are in generational poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is huge. And then you take a step further and look at our single-parent population, and we are almost at 4,000 students who are single parents. And those are only individuals who self-identify. So just let's think about the students who don't self-identify. Mm-hmm. For one, they may not even know what I don't know really what that is.
So they don't check it off.
Absolutely. And then single parents, there's so many students who think that a single parent, if you are still with your boyfriend or your girlfriend, that you're not a single parent. They don't look at the fact that you have to be married in order not to be considered a single parent.
Or they're embarrassed about it and don't want to,
admit
to it. Which is nothing to be embarrassed about. It's part of life. You've worked.
Absolutely.
You can do something about it.
We were talking earlier about the teachers who are going to be engaging with these students. If the numbers are 71%, the odds are every teacher on this campus in Racine or any campus is dealing with this.
You got it.
Or students that are in this.
Mm-hmm. You got it. That's why I see it as it's an important platform, and I'm thinking, how can we get this training out here? And that's one of the great things that I love about Gateway. It seems that when something like this does come along, we do a great job of at least trying to get it out to the staff and the faculty. So I'm looking forward to that journey that when they do present this as, because I'm thinking positively.
Mm-hmm.
As we are a strength-based college, positivity is part of my top five. So
mine too.
So therefore, positively, we will. I believe that it's going to be something that we're moving in that direction to train administration, staff, faculty.
Yeah. So I mean, and again, I'm just going to ask the question: not every staff member has engaged with these facts.
No.
Wow. That seems, and I don't care. Hell, that's wrong. That's
there you go.
Yes.
There's some people that don't They don't know it.
Yeah.
There's no platform mm-hmm. right now for it. So they're mm-hmm. like, that's extra reading. Why would I want to do that? Mm-hmm. So there's no interest. They don't understand why they, you know, what's the connection?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of reasons, mm-hmm. but I think when it's personal, of course, we're invested.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to be mm-hmm. able to shift this to, it's not personal anymore, but this is why you need to know this
right.
to better educate or prepare these individuals for the world.
Right. And I would think that anyone who becomes a teacher, their goal is to teach students, to have those, as Oprah would say, aha moments in their mm-hmm. students.
You hope.
Mm-hmm. You would hope.
But I found out that wasn't always the teacher's motivation.
That's true. I mean, that's one of the questions we couldn't get, to before was, you know, is enough being done, you know, to fix the issue? Obviously, you know, in my vantage point, the answer would be, like you said, no, that I had to kind of figure it out myself, mm-hmm. but...
But all of us need to take an active part, and so that's what I was just reminding myself and my husband. Now I just recently got married.
Oh, congratulations!
Thank you. And I was just reminding him. I'm like, we have to do stuff to contribute to the community, to society.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that I want my daughter to understand there's a responsibility and to be reminded also as you know where I come from and what I need to do for other people.
Absolutely.
You know, one of the things when I was a kid, I was going through a lot, and I was a part of the Big Brothers Big Sisters program,
mm-hmm.
and Cliff and Judy, who I'm sure are no longer here, they were very old people, but they were great. They took me to Old Orchard Mall, which is in Skokie, Illinois.
Oh my gosh! Yeah,
and I had never seen anything like that.
Wow.
You know? And to be able to have those experiences,
mm-hmm.
the commodity here that, of course, education is huge,
mm-hmm.
but time.
Absolutely.
Just spending time with someone who's going through something
mm-hmm.
and saying, I hear you, I respect you, mm-hmm. I acknowledge you,
absolutely.
That makes the world of difference. And that changed the course of my life. It really did.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. I bet. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, now you're just hitting on something. I'm
yes.
like, I need to think about that.
Yeah.
Yes.
As a vehicle, you mm-hmm. know, so
right.
thank you.
Yeah. Well, I again, thank you so much, Emma Hendrith, the Director of Student Support and Tutoring, and Shayla Thompson, Student Support Specialist, both at Gateway Technical College. Thank you so much for being here today. I sincerely appreciate it.
Once again, thank you for inviting
yes,
us.
Thank you. And thank you for looking further into this and want to continue the conversation, because I think that's what happens. Sometimes we go to these workshops and we just like, okay, it was good, but we're done.
Absolutely.
And so thank you for bringing this, you know, to the surface level and letting your listeners hear about our research and what we came across, and also just our personal experience as well.
Actually, and I want to add this quickly.
Sorry, Troy.
No, it's okay. I wanted to talk for people who are listening who want to hear more about this information. How can they get it? Can people get in touch with you if they have questions, comments, concerns?
Absolutely.
How can they do so? What's the recommended path?
Well, I think our website and just, you know, looking up our names, or we can tell them now in terms of the email.
Okay.
So that probably would be the best mm-hmm. way. And my email, this is Emma Hendrith. So my email is Hendrith, HENDRIETHE, @gtc.edu.
And then mine is Thompson, Thompson, SV as in Victoria, @gtc.edu. Sorry, there's another Thompson S, so I had to add in the extra V.
Right.
Thank you guys so much. It has been a sincere pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
What a fantastic conversation. I want to thank both of my guests, Dr. Emma Hendrith and Shayla Thompson, for highlighting such an important issue that students here at Gateway face, but also so many people in and around our area face, including myself when I was growing up. So it was just so enlightening to hear their stories and share my story with all of you. Have a great rest of your day. We'll see you next time on Generation Now.